This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you, Matt and Patrick here. Hello, Patrick. How are we today?
Doing pretty well. You know, I came outside. It's 2 above 0. It felt like 20 above zero.
Oh, hold your hats. It is now, are we double digits now? Is it 10 above? I'm pulling it out. Oh, we're down to 8 now. 8 glorious degrees. You still got to be pretty careful out here because my dad, who lived up on the Iron Range for much of his youth, he'd say they'd go through these stretches of, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of minus 20, minus 30 degree temperatures back then when we used to get colder up there. And then all of a sudden it'd be like a 6 degrees and you were like, it felt magnificent. It was 36 degrees warmer, but still it's pretty dangerous outside. And so you got to still be careful out there. With us, but it is 8, and it is definitely looking like we're going to get, tonight's the last night, but we're going to get below freezing tonight, and then we're above freezing tomorrow, and then Thursday night we're below freezing, but only by 2 degrees, and now they're saying into the 40s early next week. So at least we'll start melting the stuff off. I mean, it is Mardi Gras today, Fat Tuesday today. I got socially dish. I mean, what am I supposed to do? I'm a Catholic on Ash Wednesday. Do I just go get a thing of Kingsford and do it to myself? You know, are we supposed to do the ashes? How am I doing this? And behold, the Kingsford briquette. And there you go. Do the sign of the cross. I don't know how. Yeah. By the way, I can't ever remember everything being jammed up here today. Sunday is Valentine's Day. Monday is President's Day. Tuesday is Fat Tuesday. Wednesday is Ash Wednesday. That's a busy week already. I'm kind of exhausted. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. But enjoy. The weather is starting to turn. And at least I don't ever think we bellyached as much as the South did because they had a few days of cold weather. Oh, they're acting as if this is the apocalypse down there. Good luck with all that. Patrick Kulikin from Minnesota Reform are going to join us here a little bit. We're going to be talking about some of the news, mainly the fact that they couldn't get the police funding bill passed. They'll talk with Brett about that. But I want to start off today with a parking suggestion. Yeah, you might want not to drive your tractor into the church, all right? You might want to not do that. A man from Western Minnesota facing multiple felony charges after he allegedly drove a tractor into a church and fell asleep at the altar. On the altar. He took a nappy poo on the altar. Joseph Rongstead. Now, I'm going to presume it's Rongstead. It's R-O-N-G-S-T-A-D. That sounds like Rongstead to me. Joseph Rongstead, 38, of Watson, charged in Chippewa County District Court with second-degree burglary of a religious building. They probably don't pull that one out too often. And first-degree criminal damage to property. Rongstead was found wrapped in a blanket, asleep in the altar at Watson Lutheran Church around 8 a.m. Maybe he thought it was Christmas still and he was in the nativity scene. Maybe he just, I'm swaddled. Look at me swaddled here. Just need my big old manger. Unfortunately, it's February. Around 8 a.m. on Sunday, February 7th, according to a criminal complaint, before finding Rongstead on the altar, the sheriff's deputy arrived at the scene to see a John Deere 955 tractor with the loader smashed through the Nazareth of the church. The deputy noted that Rongstead seemed confused and was unsure of where he was. The complaint states, adding that Rongstead couldn't recall much from the night before, though he remembered driving to the church door because he wanted to stay warm. The 38-year-old man denied using drugs or alcohol, but a urine sample revealed the presence of amphetamines and methamphetamines in Rongstead's system. Oh, he wasn't even on the planet at this point. A search of the church turned out we can actually track his movements. This is like a family circus cartoon. You can see where the kids were. The search of the church turned up a disheveled kitchen area, which had a first aid box with bandages thrown all over, a jar of pickles that opened, and a packaged communion wine containers that had been gone through. Charges said similar bandages were found in Rongstead's coat pocket. The criminal complaint estimates the approximately $1,000 for the damage was done to the church, which has not held a service the past 2 Sundays. Watson is located about 5 miles northwest of Montevideo. So there you go.
I was going to ask if he got into the communion wine, but it sounds like he got into harder things than that.
Oh, the communion wine was to go with the pickles. I mean, you know, and Lord knows, I mean, if you've read the Bible, you know, body of Christ, blood of Christ, pickled delicious vegetable of Christ. You know, it's right there. I mean, it's the way Jesus wanted it to be. Dear Lord, I don't want to go out on a limb here and say Mr. Rongstead's got a problem, but you, dude, I think you got a problem. And when you're at the point where you're driving tractors into churches, wow. And think about this. You know how dangerous this is for this guy? I mean, hey, it's bad enough what happened to the church. But think about how cold it's been. I mean, this was back when that first blast of cold weather came in. And this is out in rural Minnesota. You know it was probably minus 20, minus 30 degrees. This knucklehead was out there in a tractor. He, to a point almost, it's probably lucky he hit the church, because if he hadn't, he probably would have been stuck out in some field and dead, frozen to death. Ugh. Anyway, all my best to the church. Hope the damage isn't too bad, and something tells me he's going to be paying for his crime. If there is a ray of sunshine to this story, there you go. A fascinating story I found today, involving sometimes the little guy does win the challenge, but I got to tell you, it is bizarre how bad sometimes our system is geared towards the big giants here. Let me go through the story here. This is Veg Times, the vegetarian magazine. You know, a heck of a Sudoku, and it's free range too, so you'll enjoy that. Food giant Nestle has abandoned its pursuit of the trademark the terms "the original vegan butcher," "the vegan butchers," and "vegan butcher." So once again, the three were "the original vegan butcher," "the vegan butchers," and "vegan butcher." After a lengthy battle with a Minneapolis-based vegan butcher shop, the herbivorous butcher, in 2016, Guam Borden siblings Kale and Aubrey Walsh opened the herbivorous butcher. There you go. The first vegan butcher shop in the United States. Too much fanfare, selling their house-made deli meat, sausages, ribs, and cheeses. Shortly after opening, the store raised criticism from media outlets for the use of the word butcher when applied to vegan products, terminology that has since become commonplace in the American lexicon, large part due to the success of the herbivorous butcher. Speaking of butchering, as seen in the years of Operation Vegan trademark battle. In August 2017, the store attempted to register the trademark Vegan Butcher with the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Okay. The United States Patent and Trademark Office quickly denied the store the trademark, citing that the term was merely descriptive. So they basically said, no, you can't coin the phrase vegan butcher, because the Patent and Trademark Office says that it's just merely descriptive. That year, Nestle, the giant, massive, and boy, Nestle is a monster of a company. I mean, I believe they're one of the companies that's been trying to buy water supplies of countries, which is terrifying to think about. But Nestle acquired vegetarian brand Sweet Earth Foods. Since then, the company has released a variety of vegan meats, including the Awesome Burger, and announced it would be selling Sweet Earth's deli slices from its own deli counters, emblazoned with the phrase "the vegan butcher," positioned inside of supermarkets. Okay. So basically, you have the original group, the herbivorous butcher, and they wanted to be called the vegan butcher, but the United States Patent and Trademark Office said, no, that's just merely descriptive. But then here comes Nestle. and they want to now trademark it. After the trademark office denied the herbivorous butcher's trademark, Nestle filed a trademark application for the nearly identical term, the vegan butcher. In September of 2019, as Nestle's trademark application neared approval, the original store filed an opposition with the U.S. Patent and Trade Office to bar the company from trademarking the term, which has become crucial to the marketing and operations of the independent vegan butcher shop. So, wait a second here. And this is, you know, God, you know, when you people talk about why government is bad. Now you know me. I think the government, for the most part, does a pretty darn good job. Take the U.S. Postal Service. How magnificent the U.S. Postal Service works. Take a look at, housing and urban development. How many people get helped there? You know, when you don't have, you know, corporations running things like the Interior Department and stuff, a lot of good can be done. And, you know, frankly, when you have a competent government, as opposed to Donald Trump's government, when you have a competent government, you can deal with something like a pandemic. So I believe in government overall, but it's crap like this that turns even the most stalwart pro-government individual into a really kind of person. Because once again, what the United States Patent and Trademark Office basically denied the initial trademark request by the herbivorous butcher because it was merely descriptive, but they were getting ready to go through with it and give Nestle, the big corporation, the trademark. So they went back and sued to bar the company from trademarking the term, which had become crucial once again to their own little butcher shop. So good for them. The herbivorous butcher does not plan to pursue the trademark for those terms in order to encourage large and small companies alike to continue innovating vegan products without potential legal recourse. I hope they realize, as we did, that the term vegan butcher belongs to all the plant-based meat mongers that are working towards better food and better tomorrow for animals and humans alike. Aubrey told Veg News. Sounds like it's just out of Wallace and Gromit, doesn't it? Veg News. It's a movement that shouldn't belong to a corporation or any one business. Oh, silly small businesses. I got to give you credit, though. Give the twins the credit. They went out there and they stood up against them. They've abandoned the trademark. And obviously, it is a pretty open and shut case because of the fact that, you know, they have their application they sent in well beforehand. Yeah, I would like to have someone at the United States Patent and Trademark Office explain exactly how in the world is it that you so quickly dismissed their claim, but couldn't, you know, my God, you couldn't roll out the red carpet fast enough for Nestle. And my guess is, and I don't know any more details of the story. I hadn't heard of this story until I got my veg news. Thank you very much. That centerfold, by the way, that is one hot carrot this month. Sorry. But it just keeps going and going. My presumption is once the challenge happened and Nestle realized, oh, this could be trouble, they probably offered a lot of money, but on principle, the original twins, Kale and Aubrey Walsh, basically said, no, this is for everyone. This should not be trademarked for anyone because, you know, this is a new, I mean, it would be like, you know, that say someone tried to trademark the term deli meats, you know, that you couldn't sell deli meats because they had the trademark for it. I mean, that's kind of a ludicrous patent, but Nestle was going to get one because, hey, apparently the bigger the corporation, the faster the patent and trademark office works to help you out. But congratulations. I think it's wonderful, frankly. I mean, I'm not vegan. I'm not vegetarian. But, I mean, I'm eating more and more vegetables. I'm eating more plant-based foods. And some of this stuff, I mean, have you, Patrick, eaten any of the vegetarian-based meat products that are put out there now?
Yes, actually, my mom is kind of off and on vegan for pretty much my whole life. Mm-hmm. I can tell you the quality of that stuff has gotten infinitely better over
it's
the last
amazing.
20 years.
It is amazing. It really is. And they're I kind of they get more grief than they deserve because you always get meat guy out there saying, how come is it the plant guys always try to make food that looks like meat, but meat people never try to take their meat and make it look like a plant? Well, because it is a little bit, you know, as a person who was a vegetarian for a while, it's very difficult to just kind of put the side dishes on a plate and think to yourself you're having a meal. So the fact that they are actually in our society, whether we like it or not, when you go to the grocery store and you have a hamburger, you get the thing is set up for buns and ketchup and mustard and all that stuff. And so, you know, by creating replacement entities that work within the system that we have in place, that's why they do it. I will say this, as a guy that does eat meat still, and I know that there are some people that are going to come after me, I'm sorry. I mean, I think this is great. I think that this is definitely the right trajectory, and indeed, I am eating more plant-based foods. I will say those first generation of meat stuff, oh God, were those rough. Especially those first generations of bacon. Oh, those were rough. Those were rough. But they, you know, they have indeed gotten a lot better now. And as a matter of fact, I mean, some of these products are just amazing, just absolutely amazing, and very, very easy to see how they're getting a big fan base. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we come on back, I gotta poke at Paul Gazelka some more about his mysterious numbers from yesterday. We'll talk about that when I do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Progressive voice of Minnesota. It is Matt McNeil. Yeah, of course. Of course I slaughtered the name. My God. Did you ever hear me do the old tennis names when those were around? Oh, I had to stop doing tennis scores because I just, you know, I mean, Phil versus Marl. It's guys with like eight different consonants in a row. It's like, come on. I have a hard time with stuff like wind and wind, you know. What are you doing this to me for? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I want to bring up yesterday. So it's funny. You're not paying attention, the Senate Republicans basically are of the mindset that they need to punish Minneapolis. I mean, there is some really twisted, dark stuff going on back there. I'm just going to say it. Because they got to punish them. Get them. Kind of like a villain in a Disney movie or something. Of course, we talked about the governor asked for, what, $35 million for funding to help for security in Minneapolis during the Derek Chauvin trial. The House actually did not get their bill passed, and not because conservative elements derailed it. I mean, the conservatives were all going to vote against it anyway. But because for the metro area Democrats, enough for the bill to fail, said no, we're not going to go with this because they don't feel as if giving the Minneapolis Police Department money is a good idea. So an interesting side note. But that being said, it is, you know, you've got this case where the Senate has got a very different plan. Not only have they announced they're not going to give any money to Minneapolis to help out with their security. But as a matter of fact, they're going to go out there and take away money from the city of Minneapolis, and they want to give it to other police agencies outside the city. Now, as rich as that is, I mean, my God, I mean, and we've talked about the fact that it clearly feels to me, like what you're seeing is Paul Gazelka wants more images of a burning Minneapolis. He wants more images of chaos on the streets because that he can use that to try to help get the Republicans elected. That's kind of what he wants. At least that's what it seems like to me. And, you know, and trust me, don't put anything past Paul Gazelka. The guy is just an absolute political tool. That's all he is. And so, you know, the other part of this thing, which is even more obnoxious, is the fact that for most of the counties, including counties that Paul Gazelka represents, they get more money from the state tax coffers than they put into the state tax coffers, which means they're being subsidized pretty much mainly by the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. So the mentality I've said is, well, if Hennepin County stopped sending all of its money out to rural Minnesota and just kept it in-house, well, then we'd have more than enough money. Now, granted, a lot of rural counties, including counties that Paul Gazelka represents, they'd be screwed. They would. But, I mean, isn't this your whole argument? Your whole argument is you need to spend within your means? Well, then fine. Let's do that. Let's just, we'll keep our money in Hennepin County. Anoka will keep their money. Ramsey, Dakota. We'll all keep our money in the metro area in our counties. And your counties can spend the money that you collect in your taxes. And done. You talk about you have to live within your means. Well, you are the poster child of not living within your means. You are the poster child of this. So fine, I think it's, once again, it's about time we stopped, as the metro area, subsidizing these rural counties that basically can't spend within their own budget. So I think it's time to do that. Especially when you have the Senate Majority Leader who's not from Minneapolis, who is from rural Minnesota, who basically wants to punish the city of Minneapolis as a political tool, who doesn't seem to care about the people that live in the city at all, could care less if there's problems or not, and basically just wants to punish it for political reasons. Fine. Then you live within your means. We'll live within our means. You live within your means. That's only fair. And as a matter of fact, I think there are two different avenues now. Someone brought up the point to me last night, said, well, couldn't a resident sue the state and say, you know, if Paul Gazelka, under this exact cause, if Paul Gazelka doesn't want to give the city of Minneapolis back its own taxpayer dollars to pay for security in Minneapolis, well, then shouldn't we sue them and say, you know what? Hey, you can only spend as much money as your county takes in taxes, and we want our money back. Also, I think there should be some sort of constitutional amendment that we put up to the voter, because once again, boy, would that be a nightmare for Republicans in rural counties, because all you'd have to do is say, you know, this bill will prevent those Minneapolis fat cats from getting your taxpayer dollars. And a lot of Republicans would be like, oh, vote yes for this, without realizing their county, because they have been lied to for so many years about the fact that, no, Minneapolis is not taking your taxpayer dollars. You guys, on the other hand, are taking tons of Minneapolis-St. Paul taxpayer dollars. But they don't know that because they've been sold a bill of goods. It'd be hilarious. God, it'd be hilarious watching a lot of these conservative Republicans run back out to their districts and say, you know how I've been saying about Minneapolis, St. Paul's been taking our tax dollars? I've been lying. We're taking their money, so you got to vote against this, or else it's really going to hurt us. Oh, just delightful. Anyway, during the debate on this yesterday, Senator Warren Limmer, now Warren Limmer is a Republican. He quoted the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office numbers on the arrests in the aftermath of George Floyd, and said 42% of those arrested were from greater Minnesota. 18% were from out of state. So 60% were non-Minneapolis, St. Paul people, which is, once again, one of the things that the Governor Walz was saying, and we have been saying, is that these are people from outstate. Most of the people that came in are not from the city of Minneapolis that caused the problems. They're from areas like Paul Gazelka's district. He's not keeping his tyrants under control in that district. They're not keeping, in rural Minnesota, they're not keeping these people under lock and key. They need to be taking care of these people as they come into our city and do damage. Funny story, Paul Gazelka had his own version of the numbers. He said 77% of those arrested were from the metro, 15% from outstate, 5% out from out of state, and Baby Ruth, or something like that. I'm not sure exactly what the whole thing was. But wait a minute, 77 plus 15 plus 5, that's 97. Where are the other 3% from, Paul? Needless to say, it was a little bit of a head scratcher. Kevin Featherly, though, did follow up on this. He said, I'm told Gazelka was relying on info relayed during last summer's GOP Senate Transportation Judiciary hearings, which resulted in the report blaming the riots on failed DFL state and city leadership. You know, basically, he says, I haven't had time to review the data to record those hearings to find out the source of that data. So basically, Paul Gazelka he doesn't trust the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department. I mean, once again, funny how all of a sudden law enforcement can be thrown under the bus when it doesn't go with the narrative that Paul Gazelka wants. Mm-hmm. So the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office numbers are not good enough for him. He quotes these numbers that came from a dog and pony show rally that basically was the whole point was saying, bad Metro Democrats. Bad. Oh, do you know that 895% of the 100% of people that were coming in were bad people from the city? I can't believe it. Now, I'm making that up, but it seems like he might have done that too. It seems like he might have pulled those right out of the old caboose. Oh, Paul, I would love, oh God, would I love to watch the panic look on your face if someone from the city of Minneapolis brought a lawsuit against the state that says when Paul Gazelka, the Senate Majority Leader, is not giving back what is basically Minneapolis and St. Paul's tax dollars to keep the city of Minneapolis safe, then there's a failure in the system and that each county should only be able to spend as much money as they bring in. Holy God! Would every Republican in this state wet themselves? As a matter of fact, there are some people that have realized this is a really bad idea that Paul Gazelka is going down this path. And it's not just metro area people. I'll share a little bit more with that when I come on back. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Hey, we're at Mardi Gras today, but you know what that means. It means that just you're going to savor the calendar even more. That's right. We have the 2021 calendar still available if you'd like to help out AM 950. Your donation will help keep Progressive Radio on the air. Plus, we'll send you a calendar. Now, it's a $50 one-time donation or a $25 recurring donation. You become a member. Once again, you're helping keep Progressive Radio on in one of the few radio stations left in the country carrying Progressive Radio. So thank you. We're really appreciative of that. So by all means, go to am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com. Click on the membership tab. Get yourself the calendar. And thank you very much. We do appreciate that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Minneapolis has now won. So once again, piggybacking on what we were talking about a little earlier here, that this is a dangerous path that we're going on with the Senate Republicans, where basically not only are they not willing to help out Minneapolis, the largest city in the state, but they're trying to actually hurt Minneapolis for political reasons and by trying to take away funding. And the first thing I mention is, well, considering pretty much most of the state does not, you know, they don't take in enough tax revenue to pay for their own bills, that they need Minneapolis-St. Paul's part of their tax base to basically help them out. This is a really stupid path for you to go down because, like I said, I mean, at this point, now that Paul Gazelka is not wanting to give Minneapolis-St. Paul the aid it needs, basically its own tax dollars back to help keep Minneapolis safe during the potential problems with the Derek Chauvin trial, well, now we should probably start suing them and saying no, that each county can only spend as much money as they take in. That way we'd have more than enough money to take care of Minneapolis. Trust me, Minneapolis, Hennepin County would be, it would just be amazing here. The parks would have a ton of money. Schools would have a ton of money. It would be fantastic. Roads would probably be taken care of. We'd have more than enough money for whatever the new police force would be in Minneapolis. And, of course, all the rural and suburban forces would be taken care of. Oh, my God, it'd be great. It would be fantastic. And now they're basically giving you the case because when Gazelka says, no, we're not going to give Minneapolis back its own money and from the tax base to help keep it safe, well, I think now you have a good argument. It's not all people. As a matter of fact, there have been some editorials, and I read a few editorials a few weeks ago which basically came from rural Minnesota, that said, hey, before you guys start picking this fight, I want to say thank you very much to Minneapolis St. Paul, because if not for their funding, we would actually not have a lot of stuff. So thank you very much, Minneapolis St. Paul. We appreciate the tax dollars you send our way. But that hasn't stopped Republicans, who are screaming about how we need to keep punishing the places where all the minorities live. Well, they're not saying it exactly like that, but they're kind of saying it like that. You know what I mean? They're not. It's not verbatim. It's a, you know, paraphrasing. Paraphrasing. But I mean, that's where that's where these people are at right now. They just want to. It's about the politics of it all, not what's best for the state. So, but there are some people, once again, that are out there that are fighting to basically say, no, give Minneapolis its money. Let's not go down this path. And Minneapolis won an ally this week as it fights off its effort by Republicans in the legislature to cut its state funding. Rural cities, the organization representing more than 100 cities in greater Minnesota on Monday, stated its opposition to the Senate Republicans' proposal to cut local government aid from Minneapolis to pay for law enforcement mutual aid bills as the city prepares for the murder trial of former officer Derek Chauvin. Democratic Farm Labor Governor Tim Walz and the DFL-led House are locked in a stalemate with the GOP, Senate GOP, on how to pay for the security costs during the upcoming trial. Walz has asked lawmakers to approve $35 million in state funding for an account that would pay law enforcement agencies for their assistance. The GOP majority Senate on Monday approved a legislation 35-32 that would pay for that security by cutting Minneapolis's share of local government aid, state funding distributed to cities to help pay for general services. It, once again, pretty much our own taxpayer dollars. That not only is it bad enough that they are taking our taxpayer dollars to subsidize their rural counties and their rural cities, but now they want to even prevent us from having access to the money that we are rightfully deserved and basically give that out to rural counties. All right, I see how this is going to go. The Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities opposes the legislation, raising concerns on how such legislation could harm rural communities in the future, given their reliance on state aid. Just as extraordinary public safety events can happen in Minneapolis, so too can they occur in Mankato, Marshall, and Little Falls, said Little Falls Mayor Greg Zilka. The president of the coalition wrote to Senate Republicans, CGMC opposes in all circumstances the use of LGA as a penalty or tool to enforce a policy preferences of the legislature. He added, LGA is a general purpose aid that supports all the services cities provide. Using LGA as a penalty, diverting it to other jurisdictions, or directing how it's spent erodes local control and the purpose of the LGA program. Zilka also outlined other concerns with the Senate GOP approach, among them that would happen if the city does not receive local government aid. During the Great Recession, the legislature cut local government aid to cities across the state. The risk of LGA cut to pay for mutual aid bills could also catch city officials by surprise, creating a de facto unallotment of funding for city services, he said. Depending on the scope of the bill due, without LGA, could have severe consequences on the city and force it to make tough choices as to what services, personnel, or capital projects must be cut to make up for the losses. The debate over how to pay for security costs during the Chauvin trial is expected to continue as Walz and House leadership reassess their path forward. Well, once again, it's the cities, the rural cities, they're not dumb. They see exactly where, A, where their money's coming from, and B, what would happen if Minneapolis, St. Paul started saying, you know what, no. I'm kind of shocked we haven't had a lawsuit. Someone hasn't sued. Saying, you know, wait a minute here, my job, my house, my personal safety is in jeopardy because Paul Gazelka, a non-metro area Republican, and the Senate GOP, which is pretty much all non-metro Republicans, one or two exceptions, but for the most part, all outstate Republicans that don't live in the city, are trying to take the money that we have here and preventing us from being able to have our own safety and security, especially when we, as taxpayers, subsidize outstate Minnesota. You want to know the truth? Is I honestly think that. Well, first of all, the Republicans have already made their statement. They passed the bill. They're not going to unpass the bill. They're going to pass the bill. So they've already got their campaign talking point. We passed a bill to hold those big sit us lickers accountable. We go, those fat cats. We took the side of police. Well, not the Capitol Police, but and not the Hennepin County Sheriff's, because I contradicted his numbers all the time. But no, just some police. Rural police officers. But they got their talking point. But the reality is that I think they would frantically be scrambling if there was all of a sudden a lawsuit that said, hey, I think that each county should only get the amount of money they pay into it in their pay taxes into it. And once again, I want to make sure when I brought this idea up, I did also bring up the other amendment I wanted to pass, which says that if a county needs more money than they collect, they need a 2/3 majority vote from the rest of the state to get that in both the House and the Senate. They need 2/3 to get a funding increase for their county. So it's not impossible for these counties to get more money, but what requires these counties to do, particularly the Republican politicians, is not be such jackasses. You can't just sit there anymore and say, you metro people, I'm tired of you and your fat cat city slicker ways.
Hi guys, I know that I was just 5 seconds ago ripping on you and calling you a bunch of names, and gee, Wilker, sorry about that, but I need my county needs some money. Could you help out? Could you do that? That'd be great.
No, it would require, and trust me, Paul Gazelka won't stop being a jackass. He just won't. And a lot of people like Grunhagen and Mary Franson and, Jeremy Munson, they're not going to stop being jerks. So they'll basically, if this ever happened, they'd have to take a massive cut to their county services. And maybe that might come back and bite them. I can see the clouds thinning over the Republican voters in rural Minnesota. It's like, hey, wait a second. You guys in the Republican Party have been lying to us. Those fat cat city slickers from Minneapolis weren't taking our money. We were taking theirs. And now they're not giving us anymore. And we've got to lay off county sheriffs. We got to shut down major projects. Or else we got to raise our local taxes so that we can cover these. You guys lied. And at that point, every Republican in rural Minnesota was like, I am not going to run for re-election. I have accomplished so much. So much. If they want to go down this road, Minneapolis has the power. And yes, I understand. I know. I bring this up and I get Republicans, or excuse me, Democrats. Democrats are like, Matt, come on. We don't want to be jerks. No, I don't want to be a jerk either. I'm perfectly okay with the system that if rural counties need more money, I don't mind sending a little tax dollars their way. It's just that when we need tax dollars, I don't want the Republicans in outstate Minnesota to basically saying, no, we're not going to give you the tax dollars. And as a matter of fact, we're going to cut your state funding, which really is your own tax dollars anyway. And we're going to pocket that and we're going to give it to other people. Well, fine. You want to be a jerk? Well, I can be a jerk too. And trust me, me being a jerk is going to hurt you a hell of a lot more than you being a jerk to us. Republicans bank on Democrats being decent people. That is who they are. They bank on Democrats going out there and doing the right thing. And reality is maybe it's time for them to pay the piper. I think... If Paul Gazelka and the rest of these Republicans want to go down this path, I'm all for it. Hennepin County keeps Hennepin County's money. Ramsey County keeps Ramsey County's money. Anoka County keeps Anoka County's money. Dakota County keeps their money. And then your small little rural county that doesn't have a really big tax base, well, you get to keep all your taxpayer money. But you're going to take a pretty big size hit. So you're going to have to figure out what you're going to cut because you got to live within your means. Something that Republicans love to scream at Democrats, even though Democrats are subsidizing their rural Republican counties. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I mean, I'm tired. I mean, I think it's the only option you have left. I mean, we are seeing what a mountain of lies from Republicans has led to. And the reality is these people, and this is why this is such a dangerous bill for Republicans. If we put something on the ballot that said counties can only, any tax dollars that are collected by a county stay in that county, if you did that, it would pass in rural Minnesota overwhelmingly because Republicans have convinced these people that all that's going on is Minneapolis, St. Paul is taking their tax dollars. And the reality is it couldn't be further from the truth. And so, I mean, I'm just tired of this. You know, we're supposed to bow down to people who are basically being fed mountains and mountains of lies and are not knowing what is actually going on. And when you get someone like Paul Gazelka being as evil and mean as he is being towards the city of Minneapolis, well, now I guess it's time for us to stop being the nice guys and playing at their level and giving them a taste of their own medicine. Because I guarantee you, once again, us being jerks is going to hurt them a heck of a lot more than them being jerks to us. 952-946-6205. Jane was shopping for Super Bowl snacks at the Hudson Target last weekend. She found a recruitment flyer for a white supremacist group in the cereal aisle. A Grand Wizard Crunch. The more you read, the worse it gets, she said. It was like, this is crazy. This is actually here. Jane, who is Jewish and is using a changed name to protect her identity, isn't alone in her experience. Within the last week, Hudson residents say they've spotted flyers for the Church of Creativity left on cars at the Hudson Aldi and County Market. The Church of Creativity, also called the Creativity Movement or Creativity Alliance, has a history of violent crime and is deemed a neo-Nazi group by the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League. The group has undergone multiple name changes since its founding in the 1970s. Its website refers to the group as both the Creativity Alliance and the Church of Creativity. I felt super uncomfortable being there, said Jane. I grabbed a couple of things and just left. Before leaving, Jane alerted store management to the flyer. I'm going to go out on a limb here and think I don't think the Hudson Target knew that was there. I'll give them that out. A spokesman for Target says the company is actively investigating the matter. I hope so. You got cameras all over the place. You should be able to find who did this. Neither of the Hudson Police Department or the St. Croix County Sheriff's Office have received reports regarding the flyers. Basically they don't know about it. Great. Hudson is such an inclusive city, like when you have Hudson Inclusion Alliance, Jane told Bring Me the News. But looking around while I'm shopping, it's like, who are these people who might have put them there in the 1990s, the creativity movement with its name changing to the World Church of the Creator in 1996? Was considered one of the most notorious hate groups, according to the ADL, with several of its members convicted of violent crimes, hate crimes throughout the decades. It was originally founded by former Florida state legislature in the 1970s. The SPLC says the group has all but collapsed since its early 2000s in the wake of multiple lawsuits, leaving over weak remains. But the group uses its website to provide downloads of flyers, including one identical to the one Jane found. This particular flyer had been found on college campuses across the country in recent years. My son, who's at the U, said that someone showed up. Someone had left a bunch of flyers around, racist flyers, at the U one day. So, they apparently he and his buddies picked them all up, put them in the trash. So, c'est la vie. Carla Hill, senior investigative researcher for the ADL Center on Extremism, wrote a piece for NBC explaining how the groups use flyers to both recruit members and intimidate people of color. When propaganda appears on doorsteps or car windshields or public bulletin boards, it is important to not only community leaders to condemn it, but also for law enforcement to be fully informed about such incidents, Hill wrote. Communities nationwide should view these propaganda incidents as opportunities for learning, for speaking up, and for actively rejecting this growing trend. Now, I want to take a moment here because I think this is a very important thing. Look where these were at. This was in Hudson, okay? My guess is these people that are going to be trying to do this, they're not going to be going into the inner cities of Minneapolis or St. Paul, probably for the most part avoiding a lot of the first ring suburbs. Not all of them, but many of them. So if you're in those secondary suburbs, you're in Maple Grove or a Minnetonka or a Bloomington or Burnsville, you're up in a White Bear Lake or a Woodbury, and you see these flyers, not only, you know, obviously tell the manager of the business, because, you know, I'm going to take a, you know, like I said, I'll go out on a limb here and say most of these businesses probably have no idea these flyers are being left in their stores. So obviously getting them off the store shelves is important. But it is just as important to contact, in my mind, both the local law enforcement and the county sheriff you are in making sure they know about this. This is a hate crime. And, you know, you this is the clear intention here is to try to recruit people. And to a point, it's to try to, and as Jane had to go through here and to see the shock of it, I'd be shocked if I went through my local Target and saw something like that. The reality is that there are going to be some people that are going to go into Target who, hey, look at this. Wow, it's just right here in a Target store. Maybe I should give this consideration. No, I don't necessarily think a flyer is what is the make or break deal necessarily on whether someone is a racist. But let's face it, there's a lot of people that voted for Trump who at the very least, voted eagerly to enable a racist. At the very least. I don't think they need too much of a push to get over to the other side. You know what I mean? So if you see this stuff, contact your local law enforcement, contact the county sheriff, let them know exactly where you found that. We got Brett Johnson coming back in here in the second hour on a Tuesday. Thanks for being here. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson joining us here in studio. Brett, got a box of our friends, Lutema. They have got, they're helping bring you broadcasting here on AM 950. These are their Made in America masks.
I know. I got one on right now. And yeah, they're very comfortable, actually.
Well, you're wearing it wrong. Get it over your
snot.
Well, there we go. We got a plexiglass, but for goodness sakes.
They go over your mouth, not your eyes there.
Well, have you seen the size of my melon, for God's sakes? There we are. Hey, pretty smart. I like this. And warm. Oh, warm on a cold day. There you go. That's nice. So find them, Lutema. Disposable face masks made in America, and they're helping you bring your programming right here on AM 950. Thank you very much. Now, I do have to take it off, not because I got the glass here, so.
We got the glass. And I got to say, too, I've had masks like these before, and most of them are not very comfortable whatsoever. You end up overheating on your face, or they're just not good. And these are, I can feel already, I've only had them on a couple seconds, much, much more comfortable.
They're very nicely, I mean, we're getting, this is a sign of the times we're living in. I can evaluate a mask very quickly. It's like, I would have no idea a year ago how to do this. This is a great mask.
They're going to throw us on the home shopping network here.
Wow, and look at this. They hold well. No, look at this. Nicely done, guys. Thank you very much. We will not use that one again. I'll put this one on. I usually save the muffled voice for special nights. So I'll use that there. Hello. Who wants to socially distance? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Can we just tell people right now, stop leaving your car running outside of freaking gas stations. Got another one. This is Eden Prairie. This is here in the Palatial Broadcasting Complex is in Eden Prairie here. Eden Prairie Police Department looking for a vehicle that was stolen with a dog inside from a gas station on Monday night. 2002 Toyota Camry was left running with the keys in the ignition, stolen around 7 p.m. from a Holiday gas station located at 8051 Flying Cloud Drive in Eden Prairie. I think that's over on the other side of the Eden Prairie Center, right?
Yep, I know exactly which one that is. That's a pretty busy area. That's a gutsy place to leave your car running.
The car's dog's owner, a Weimaraner named Beavis, was inside the vehicle when it was stolen. Oh, no.
Ugh.
The car is identified as a tan Toyota Camry with Minnesota license plates 593-UND. So look for the 593-UND tan Toyota Camry. The dog answers to Beavis and was wearing a blue and red bandana Anyone who sees the dog or the vehicle has to call 911. This continues a trend of dogs being taken while inside stolen vehicles in the Twin Cities. A Labradoodle was taken along with an SUV that was left running outside of a Walgreens in Woodbury, with the dog later found tied to a vehicle in St. Paul. In Bloomington, a dog owner got the pet back after it was stolen with a vehicle while left idling outside of a hotel, and a therapy dog was inside the car, was stolen outside of a Poke House and Tea Bar in St. Paul. The dog has been reunited with its owner, which is good news there. But, you know, okay, if you are in, you are living in a metro area, well, and I'm just going to say this. If you don't think that there's crime in the most rural parts of this country, you're fooling yourself. My parents, when I was a kid, they had their car busted into as it was. They went hiking in Vermont. In Vermont! To where the guy busts the window screaming, Pepperidge Farm remembers your cock! You know?
Rural Vermont? That's
in rural Vermont.
Wow.
I'm guessing it was wearing flannel. That's it. It was like APB on a man wearing flannel. Oh, never mind. I guess we got it. But yeah, it does. People can bust into cars pretty much anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is this mentality that, well, I'm not in the city. I mean, I'm not down even like Nicollet and 60th. I'm not there. I'm in Bloomington. I'm in Eden Prairie. I'm in Woodbury. Well, no, they're watching. They're watching. Criminals are watching.
I think it's more the case that, you know, I just got to go in, pay for my gas really quick. I can watch my car from out there if anyone's going to try anything. And it doesn't take much if you leave the ignition in the car. Just pull out and you're gone.
I think it was, what, 10 years ago? Wasn't it about 10 years ago? I don't know if you remember the story. Was it Waconia on Lake Waconia? Guy left his boat running. Just pulled over the dock, left his boat running. Guy jumps in the boat, takes off. And what are you going to do? I mean, there was apparently the guy taking the boat off. There was a trailer waiting on the other side. He just jumped in the boat, took the boat, and off they went. Gone. You can't leave. No. That's Waconia, for goodness sakes.
Even if you think you're fine, you can see whatever vehicle you're driving or boating in the case you brought up, it doesn't take much for someone to go in, take it, and drive off.
And for all those people out there, I mean, for God's sakes, I have a dog. I know, I mean, a lot of people here at the station have dogs. I'm so sorry. That is just terrifying. But there's your argument why. Turn it off, lock the car, you know, leave the dog as you run in to go get your soda or whatever you're getting, and then come back on out. But yeah, just if you've got the dog in the car, just think about that. Just keep that in mind right now. Yes, it's a little bit of an inconvenience, but it's best if I don't want to lose my dog. So there you go. And I haven't seen many stories of the people trying to take people's dogs lately. Remember those stories were out for a while? Because dogs are in such high demand with the pandemic, with the shutdown.
I've not heard of that. That's sad too.
Yeah. One other quick little news note here. Remember the woman that called the police on the African-American man for bird watching in Central Park in New York? They have dropped the charges against her. Amy Cooper, 41, gained infamy last May when she appeared to be in a video calling police to falsely claim she was being threatened by an African-American man who was bird watching in Central Park. The clip posted to Twitter was filmed by the man, Christopher Cooper, and said he had asked the woman to leash her dog, which you're supposed to do in parks. She finished a program on racial bias. So, and you want to know the truth is I'm okay with this. You don't, you know, she doesn't have to go to jail. They dropped the charges because she went through a program that maybe educated her a little bit, probably did, and showed her a lesson. And of course, this whole life lesson for her is probably going to be a real big, you know, eye opener, but they have dropped the charges and she is now, she's done with this, but, you know, it's a shame it had to come to something like that. 5 sessions of therapy and how racial identities shape our lives. This is what the prosecutor told the judge in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. The therapist reported that it was a moving experience that Ms. Cooper learned a lot with the sessions together, adding that the prosecutors were now moving to dismiss the charges. So, and I don't think the guy that filmed it wanted it to go this far either. I mean, he just wanted her to stop and apologize, and it kind of went further. I mean, he seemed like a really decent guy about it. I know I'd be a lot angrier probably. But yeah, so good news there. You know, there's redemption. Now, what's with the rest of these freaking Karens?
They got to put her through whatever type of training she received, if it apparently worked, which really glad to hear if she's maybe learned some lessons about how what she did was just terrible.
The one that I'll never forget was the one, I think it was in San Bernardino, California. And it was a teacher. She pokes her head over her fence. She's got like a brick stucco fence. She sticks her head over there, starts yelling at people, then comes out around, starts yelling at minorities for being minorities, and has to. She's so violently angry. I'm going to guess drunk. But she's so violently angry that her husband is having to drag her away. And I'm like, because she lost her job with teaching, obviously. But, I mean, I'm like, what is wrong with you? Just stop. Don't be a jerk. I'm glad someone at least has maybe have learned the lesson or at least gotten wiser on this. But we got a long way to go. This is going to be a one-at-a-time thing. We got years to go on this.
Yeah, no kidding.
Can we maybe get some group sessions? Can we start doing that? We can start working on this. It is a Tuesday. That means Patrick Cooligan joins us from the fine institution of the Minnesota Reformer.
Indeed, and we talked about what happened yesterday at the State House of Representatives, where unfortunately the DFL was not able to get that bill passed, which would help with security costs, with the Chauvin trial, of course, coming up. So we touched on that, and then of course also talked a little bit about, well, Republicans wanting to cut government aid to Minneapolis, local government aid. Mm-hmm. And Patrick coined a really good term. I thought he described rural Republicans who are in favor of this as geographic socialists. I kind of like that one.
we'll hear the whole interview now. Yeah. Patrick Cooligan, Minnesota Reformer with Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Well, it's time now for our usual Tuesday visit with Patrick Cooligan of the Minnesota Reformer. He is their editor-in-chief, and of course, the Minnesota Reformer is a great resource to find out with what's happening with Minnesota politics and Minnesota news. That website is minnesotareformer.com. So I want to start off by talking about what happened in the State House of Representatives yesterday. So the DFL suffered a big setback when they had to table a bill that would have provided $35 million in funding to help the city of Minneapolis with the aftermath of the Derek Chauvin trial. Now, the DFL does have a 70-64 majority, so if they had to table that bill, that means they didn't have support of the entire caucus. And it turns out that a few members of the Minneapolis delegation weren't happy with the bill, and the DFL didn't have their vote, so therefore the leadership decided to table it. So Patrick, this really caught everyone by surprise yesterday that the House was not able to pass a bill in regards to security funding in the aftermath of the Chauvin trial.
Right. Well, I think what happened actually is that they knew they didn't have the votes to pass it, so they tabled it. Hmm. They didn't want to face the embarrassment of the bill failing. Definitely interesting dynamics yesterday. There were two competing versions of bills that would help pay police agencies for the security for the upcoming trial. The Senate version would take money away from the Minneapolis, the allotment that it gets for what's called local government aid. It's the state gives out money to cities, and it's an important part of many cities' budgets. And so the Republicans in the Senate decided, well, if we're going to pay for security for the Chauvin trial, we're going to take it right out of Minneapolis. They love to kind of flag on Minneapolis as to score political points with their own base. Now, especially in rural parts of the state. So they passed this bill to take money from Minneapolis to pay for it. On the House side, they had a separate bill that was had been advocated for by Governor Tim Walz, and they would just create this fund out of state money to help pay law enforcement agencies to help with security. And apparently the Democrats in the House just didn't have the votes. Surprisingly, the opposition was coming from Minneapolis's own delegation. I think, just did not like the idea of a kind of blank check to police agencies after what had happened last year with the demonstrations. So without the votes, the leadership tabled the bill. So now the Democrats, especially in the House, but also the governor, are kind of back to square one here. A bit of a setback. When you can't muster the votes to pass your own program, that's not usually a good sign.
And this really just points to the very narrow majority that the DFL now has in the House, where it's only 70-64. And while prior to the 2020 election, the DFL had a much larger majority to work with, and it points to the importance of being able to whip those votes and be able to get the members of your caucus to vote for a bill. I mean, it sounds like there were some rural DFLers that had concerns about the bill, but it sounds like they were on board. But when you have such a narrow majority, it only takes a few to table a bill in this case, as you talked about, and it happened to be from Minneapolis DFLers. So this certainly points to the fact that when you have a narrow majority, very important to make sure you have the entire caucus on board, because it only takes a few members to vote against your bill, and all of a sudden, well, you're gone.
Right, and that DFL House caucus is ideologically very diverse. We're also racially, ethnically, and geographically diverse as well. So it's quite a challenge for the Speaker of the House, Melissa Hortman, to try to wrangle that caucus and get them all on the same page. And there's some issues where it's just going to be very difficult. I think it probably anticipates what could be difficult votes coming up as the session develops, as they're going to be taking really important and tough votes on budget issues. And there's clearly going to be some disagreement in that caucus. I mean, you have people really way over on the left, like Aisha Gomez, for instance, from Minneapolis. I mean, she's pretty much a Democratic Socialist. And then you have over to Paul Marquardt up in Dilworth. He's kind of a survivor. He's in a district that has gone Republican in presidential races consistently for a decade, but he's survived, and one of the ways he's done that is by distinguishing himself as kind of a moderate. So you're going to have disagreement in that caucus, it's going to be difficult. That arose yesterday, and there's some interesting irony here because they lost seats in the House last year, to a large degree, I think, probably because of some of the effective messaging by Republicans against the Twin Cities. And then yesterday on an issue where Republicans are using, again, trying to message against the Twin Cities, the Democrats had trouble because of that narrow majority getting the votes together to pass the Chauvin Security Fund.
So what's going to happen next in the process? I believe the latest report was that Governor Tim Walz is going to try to address some of the members of the Minnesota House today to discuss their concerns. So Walz is certainly involved in this as well. Do we have any idea if the DFL-controlled House is going to try to negotiate a new bill or work with the Senate to come up with a compromise?
Well, sometimes what happens is that members, they just feel they need to be heard, they have a little temper tantrum, they come around to the reality of, you know, the Minneapolis members certainly don't want the Senate version where money's taken from Minneapolis, local government aid, and used for the trial. But it's going to be really up to those Minneapolis members to kind of rally and determine what it is they want, and then try to start. And also local elected officials like Mayor Jacob Fry. I mean, he's got to consider what does he want here, because the city's fate is at least a little bit in the legislature's hands. The governor's office is kind of saying that what really matters is that the security will be there, and there's no real rush to pass a bill because the local law enforcement agencies that would need to get reimbursed, they've got some time to get reimbursed, so the legislature could pass something later on. And from the governor's standpoint, I think from his office, politically speaking, they see him as really making this proposal, standing up for public safety, and kind of leading on the effort to make sure that whatever demonstrations may occur will be peaceful, there will be rioting and so forth. So they're satisfied with the outcome, come what may. So that's kind of where their position is. I mean, I think that they probably will be lobbying, and they want to get something. They don't want to wind up with this Republican bill, and I don't foresee that. I don't see that that Republican bill actually happening. But the Republicans certainly are in a probably in a better bargaining position today than they were yesterday.
Speaking with Patrick Coolican, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com, let's talk a little bit more about that bill that was passed in the Republican Senate, because something you wrote in your newsletter today talked about a response from Senator Patricia Torres-Ray to the Republican bill. Torres-Ray is a Democrat, and she was responding to this Senate Republican bill that would largely take government aid from Minneapolis to then pay for the Chauvin trial security. And she's obviously not happy about this. And one of the quotes she made was that, quote, "Your communities are declining. You do not have a tax base as big as mine. You do not have the population for the jobs of the future. I do," unquote. And she's largely talking about how the fact that when you look at the amount of money some counties pay in and then receive from the government, it's actually those urban counties that end up paying in more than they receive. And that's something that Torres-Ray was pointing out. But of course, Republicans capitalized this on their own Facebook page. So I think the challenge here, and you can talk about this too, Patrick, is that while Torres-Ray is technically correct, they have to find a way to message on this so they don't get burned and allow Republicans to continue this narrative that DFLers don't care about what happens in rural Minnesota.
Right. I refer to this as it's known as the Kinsley Gap in Washington. It's named after a guy named Michael Kinsley, who wrote about this idea that when it's a gaffe sometimes when a politician tells the truth. And I think that she's not wrong. And especially if she were to be talking about the Metro or Hennepin County, where clearly these are the economic engines of the state. And there are some rural communities that without the help of the Metro would have pretty serious problems. But it's also not a great message to go with that the rest of the state is in decline, and without Minneapolis is not going to survive. That's clearly one that Republicans are going to store away and bring out later for 2022 ads. It's a fairly recent development where this geographic division, where Republicans tend to be outside the Metro, and Democrats are so Metro, or have dominated the Metro so much. You have to go back to about the 2014 election, I think, is where Republicans really picked up a lot of seats in outstate Minnesota, and they've turned resentment toward the Metro to their favor. And I think that they're constantly messaging this idea that people in the cities are looking down on you. And I don't personally think it's true. I think so many people in the Metro have roots. They came from outstate communities, or their parents still live out there, or their grandparents certainly. The idea has some resonance, and it tracks with national political trends and Trumpism and everything else, and certainly Patricia Torres-Ray gave them some ammunition on the Senate floor yesterday.
Yeah, and you're right, going back to that 2014 election cycle, I believe that's when Republicans took control of the state Senate after the DFL had controlled that for a long, long time. And as you said, they largely ran on that platform of, well, look at the DFL. They don't care about what happens in rural Minnesota. But pointing out what Patricia...
It was actually the House. I mean, it was... Yeah, they picked picked up the House. The Senate wasn't on the ballot in 14, but yeah, they picked up 11 seats that year in the House, and 10 of them were outstate.
Right.
That's when the swing really happened, and it's kind of been that way, and then incrementally even more so over time.
And I want to expand a little bit more on her comment, because she is technically correct, and she's not necessarily trying to look down on those in rural Minnesota. She's trying to point out the facts that, well, when you look at these tax bases, it is these more metro areas that typically do end up paying more money than what they actually receive from the state government. It's just a matter of messaging on that. And if Democrats figure that out, it could be very dangerous for Republicans, because I want to move on to something that Ricardo Lopez of The Reformer wrote today. And he talked about how, well, when it comes to local government aid, there's an organization representing more than 100 cities in greater Minnesota that came out against this Republican bill, because I think they do have some fear as well that, well, if Democrats can get a hold of this and do something like, let's say, put a constitutional amendment on the ballot that says counties can only take in as much money as they pay. That's actually an idea from one of our hosts here, Matt McNeil. It's a very dangerous path to go on. So it's interesting to watch the messaging on this, because Patricia Torres Ray is correct. But on the Republican side, you're kind of playing with fire here, because if Democrats take advantage of this, well, then you could end up with a situation where LGA gets cut from other rural communities, which could do a lot of damage to them, especially as Ricardo reports going back to the Great Recession of 2008 and 2009. So this whole idea of urban versus rural is very complicated. I'm kind of long-winded here, but it's interesting to see how both sides kind of message on this issue.
Yeah, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, even though they don't represent Minneapolis, they're representing much smaller, often rural cities outside the metro. But as far as they're concerned, local government aid, that money that goes from the state government to help local governments, is sacrosanct. And they don't want the legislature just rather arbitrarily coming in and taking money from a city, as Senate Republicans are proposed to do in the case of Minneapolis. So yeah, people who are really knowledgeable about fiscal issues with local government, they know that local government aid is an important part of local government budgets. And if it were to be taken away, I mean, if Democrats said, you know, we're tired of our districts in the metro subsidizing these outstate communities, and we're going to put that money toward education or whatever else, I think you'd see some real serious budget problems in some outstate communities, and those representatives, those lawmakers who represent those communities, they actually know that. So yeah, it's interesting politics here, because on the one hand, Republicans accuse Democrats of being socialists, but the Republicans are what I would call geographic socialists when it comes to that local government aid money.
Oh, I like that term, geographic socialists. I might have to use that one in the future. Hey, unfortunately, we are out of time, as we've been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Website is minnesotareformer.com to find the best in local journalism reporting on with what's happening with Minnesota politics. Patrick, as always, enjoy our Tuesday visits, and we'll talk to you next week.
Good to be here, Brett.
All right, we will take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I love Patrick Houlihan, but I got to take a point with him. When he talked about Torres Ray making the comments about, hey, wait a minute here, now I can understand that they might be a little upset about the fact that, you know, the businesses are thriving more in Minneapolis, St. Paul than they are in rural Minnesota, and I can understand that. But this argument that, oh, here's another big, bad metro Democrat that hates us rural people. How come the media in this frickin' town never says, hey, here's some rural Republican that hates Minneapolis, St. Paul, even though we fund their counties? Talk about the hand, biting the hand that feeds you. My God, I mean, it just is annoying to see. Okay, you know, you do see how the Republicans are treating Minneapolis, St. Paul, right? You do see how they're trying to punish them, how they don't care. They could not care less. They could not care less about what happens to most people in Minneapolis, St. Paul. If something tragic happened and a lot of them died, they say, I don't care. Those are Metro people. They don't care about Minneapolis, St. Paul. And yet the minute someone like myself says, well, maybe we shouldn't be sending our money out to rural Minnesota if they're so ungrateful. Oh, here's another Democrat against rural Minnesota. No, if you're going to play it one way, play it both ways. And the first thing you should say is, wow, you guys sure hate Minneapolis, St. Paul, considering they subsidize your counties and they subsidize your city budgets, your county budgets. You sure hate them. Why is that fair? Just because they're rural doesn't mean they should be able to say things where they dismiss half this. The majority of the state population, for God's sakes, lives in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Just play it both sides. Don't all of a sudden get outraged when a Democrat says it, when clearly, I mean, my God, what are the Republicans saying? Burn Minneapolis, burn? That seems to be what they're saying. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, get back on track. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Are you kidding me? Some anonymous tipster led St. Cloud police to a man suspected of illegally hunting squirrels with blow darts. Dear Lord. In St. Cloud. Okay. That's like a Mad Lib story if I ever saw one. Why are you doing that? Stop it. Stop it. You fool. Speaking of fools, former President Donald Trump went after Senator Mitch McConnell, calling the Senate Minority Leader a dour, sullen, and unsmiling political hack. Oh, dear God. I don't know how much I'd be ripping on anyone else's smile, considering every time that Donald Trump smiled, it looked like he was going to the bathroom. In a lengthy statement on Tuesday, Trump said that McConnell was destroying the Republican side of the Senate. You mean the Senate that basically just saved your caboose? And that the senator was one of the most unpopular politicians in the United States. The Republican Party can never again be respected or strong with political leaders like Senator Mitch McConnell at its helm. Wow. Hey, I bet Mitch feels good about that vote now, huh? Doesn't he? God forbid you actually try to save that party from Trump, because it's dead.
I think he's also pointing scoreboard because he won his election and Donald Trump kind of didn't.
Well, Donald must just be beside himself without Twitter or Facebook or without social media. He's got to be just beside himself at this point. 952-946-6205. Let's do the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Even for a Tuesday, the latest COVID-19 counts of two deaths and 456 diagnosed infections reflected continued declines in the pandemic activity in Minnesota. Once again, all my best to the families who lost loved ones. Two people died. 456 people today are concerned, scared, worried. I'm with you. This is not to dismiss this, and we shouldn't until this whole thing is completely over. But those numbers are down, and as far as evaluating the pandemic, I think it's somewhat encouraging. Case counts have been lower on Tuesday since the start of the pandemic, reflecting reduced testing and reporting on weekends. Still, this Tuesday report is the lowest since September 15th in the number of new diagnosed infections with the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. The addition brings Minnesota's total of the pandemic to 6,380 COVID deaths and 474,621 diagnosed infections. The trends are encouraging ahead of looming decisions by Governor Walz and Minnesota leaders on whether to continue business capacity restrictions and to reduce viral spread and reopening schools. Sounds like tomorrow there might be a press conference from Walz and a release about schools, particularly high schools. We'll have to find out about that. The positivity rate for diagnostic testing has dropped to 3.8% in Minnesota, below the caution threshold of 5% that suggests uncontrolled spread of the virus. The number of Minnesota hospital intensive care beds filled with COVID-19 patients is down to 57, well below the peak of 399 on December 1st. However, health officials have cautioned that the progress could be upset by new, more infectious variants of the virus that are emerging in the United States. They've already said they're seeing problems in South Dakota and in Iowa with their policies they've had there of, hey, it's over. It's over. It's not over. It's not over. It's not even close to being over. Stop being fools. Stop being fools. The state on Tuesday reported that 686, 212 people in Minnesota received at least the first of the two doses of the vaccine. 240,000 people of them have completed the series. Good news there. I've got some more friends that have gotten their first shot. I'm feeling pretty good about that. They basically 95% perfective if you have the two doses on schedule. The two deaths reported Tuesday were residents of Anoka and Ramsey counties in their 70s. The mask mandate for indoor public places and social distancing guidelines remains in effect in Minnesota for the second benefit of helping suppress seasonal influenza as well. On the other side, I want to make sure I mention, too, that it does sound like The Biden administration will extend the country's foreclosure moratorium through the end of June for those defaulting on federally backed mortgages. According to a Tuesday announcement from the White House, protections for homeowners set to expire in March will now extend through June 30th. This includes a moratorium on foreclosures as well as an enrollment period for mortgage forbearances, which allows homeowners to pause or reduce their payments. Borrowers that enter the forbearance program before June 30th will also be eligible for an additional 6 months of forbearance. Those critical protections are due to expire in March, leaving many at risk of falling further into debt and losing their homes. There's going to become a point here where we're going to have to get back on track. And if we don't have aid from the federal government, if we do not have rules in place, you are going to see an instantaneous, massive increase in homelessness in this state and nationwide. So you've got to be careful about this because you can't just say, okay, pandemic's over. Everyone that's not paid, get out. You know, it's, you know, there's a lot of different circumstances here on, in regards to why certain people's might have issues with their, with paying rent or paying a mortgage. And we've got to be a little bit more accommodating. That's for sure. Julie is in Minneapolis. Julie wanted to chime in this afternoon. Welcome on in, Julie.
Hi. So, you know, Matt, I kind of agree with your idea of playing hardball and confronting, calling the bluff of the Republicans in this state and say, hey, let's have a constitutional amendment, you know. But, you know, this whole rural versus city divide, it all fits into the persecution complex that the, you know, the party regulars of the Republicans pretend to have. You people, you know, you're aggrieved. You've been hurt. You've suffered injustice in this country. It's time for you to take the country back. And they've been very effective. Think of the idiots and the monsters that stormed the Capitol. It reminds me of what an NFL coach does or a college coach. He'll say to his team to rev them up, hey, nobody believes in you. The media's against you. Nobody thinks we can win this game. And it's a tried and true method of revving up your team.
I agree with that, Julie. Thank you very much. And I mean, it's the Armageddon movie. You know, they spend the entire time, the first 20 minutes of the movie, talking about how no one gives them a chance, and then they basically dismiss and disregard every other human being on the planet for the rest of the movie because that's just the way things are. I have said this before. I haven't said this in a while. Let me make sure I'm very clear. I've lived in rural America. I have lived in farming towns. I have done the radio, you know, bounce around the upper Midwest radio syndicate. What Republicans have successfully done is harness the frustration of the farmers and the rural communities who have watched their ag markets get destroyed primarily due to Republican and conservative ag and trade policies. Absolutely. They have watched their margins go from a very livable wage to a hardly bearable wage because Republicans and conservatives have embraced corporate farming over the individual farmer, and they've made that even worse. And you have – so you have less money. You have a less viable market, a lot of hard work. And then you have many of these communities where the population of the town is 55 and older or 18 and younger. Because the minute everyone graduates, they pack their bags, they leave, and they never come back. And that leads to resentment and anger and frustration. And what the Republicans have done is gone in there and with all these things, with the lack of returns on farming, with the mutated agricultural sector, which has basically been for corporate farms, which Republicans love, and with this the lack of opportunities within these communities, as the auxiliary businesses have not developed that would offset the lack of farming jobs. The people have left and left the town behind. It's built that resentment up, and Republicans have turned that resentment on the metro area. It's the big, bad city. And granted, it helps for them that they can point to a community with a very high minority population and say to a pretty much white population, they can throw out those racist tropes which they drive through their arguments all the time. They're wasting your taxpayer money with their welfare queens. Or, I saw some guy getting government assistance who's driving an Escalade. I mean, everything's dripping with racism. But that's how they've done it. And that's what they will continue to do. And they will continue to do this because it is a ripe field for them to plant. And they will, it's easy pickings. And the reality is, here's where the criticism of Torres Ray can come in. We should be out in these communities trying to build more businesses and encourage business growth in rural Minnesota. We should be out there giving more broadband. How many times have I said broadband on this show? Statewide broadband from the Canadian border all the way down to Iowa. We should have had that decades ago. Instead, you got Republicans that keep derailing these ideas and not delivering because they would rather have the voters than actually make their voters' lives better. So they keep them struggling, keep them frustrated, keep them angry, and then they say, it's not our fault, it's those big, bad, fat cat metro area liberals. That's how they've been able to do it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Oh, Mary Franson, you are just a peach. I'll come back with that in just a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Oh, Mary. Mary Franson back at it again from Blue Stem Prairie. Now, we talked about this briefly at the very end of the show yesterday. Minnesota GOP lawmakers seek to add political affiliation to state human rights protections that now cover race, color, light race, color, creed, religion, national origin, sex, marital status, disability status with regards to public assistance, sexual orientation, and age. The political affiliation means association with a set of ideas, principles, and beliefs of a political group. Political affiliation includes the status of a voter registered with a political party and has no party or has no party on the voter's affidavit of registration. Sponsors of the bill are Mary Franson of Alexandria and Greg Bow of Chaska. Language of the bill raises questions about where the bill originated from because it refers to voter affidavits of registration. Minnesota doesn't register voters by party, so it sounds like it was written in a state that does. So basically, first of all, what we get here is we've got yet another piece of legislation that was clearly written someplace else. And this is the latest, we're the victims. And by the way, isn't it hilarious how the same people who scream, we triggered all the libs, we got all those guys, but now they're introducing, you're being mean to us because we're idiots. Stop it. No. You choose your political party. So you know, in the sense being, and it's not about faith, it's about your individual political beliefs. I can call you out, especially when you don't have an argument, especially when you bring a bill that was written for some other state and try to pass it off as your own. So and Sally Joe goes into it, you know, there. I mean, she's we're not sure where this bill came out of, but whatever it takes for Franson to overcome the authorship security in a time of pandemic. It should be mentioned, last week, a couple of readers pointed out the chief author of the bill was wearing a campaign sweatshirt during a meeting of the Climate, Energy, Finance, and Policy Committee. We posted a screenshot of it here on Bluestem Prairie. One of our tipsters sent a copy of Representative Franson's campaign logo, so we know that was her campaign logo on the shirt. We've asked the nonpartisan House Research Office whether using a House Zoom meeting qualifies for under section of the page on the legislative ethics outline. An employer or a member of the House may not use House equipment for campaign activities. So actually, you can't do that. You can't wear a campaign shirt while you're on an official Zoom call. An employee of the House may not participate in campaign activity during working hours, be obliged to participate in campaign activities as a condition of employment. Well, is it campaigning? Well, it depends. I mean, it's you know, it sure seems like it. It's a House seat, so it's back up again here in 2 years. So likely, I'd say she is. You know, it's remains to be seen if the Boo Boo Kitty Republican bill will become law. Boo Boo Kitty, they were mean to me because I'm an idiot. Yeah, that's going to get help. But there was something else that came to light with Mary Franson, which is just delightful. A reader sent a screenshot from Representative Franson's personal page where she asked who requested that she draft legislation on a gun bill. We tweeted out, leaving out the response of the constituent. So this is what Mary Franson wrote on her personal page. Someone asked me to author this bill, and the request did not go to my email, and now I have zero idea who requested it. That is why I have people email me, because I need a paper trail. If you requested this bill to be drafted, please contact me. Wow. Okay. So wait a minute here. We can just submit bills randomly to Mary Franson and she'll co-author them? I think the first one I'm going to send her is one that makes the official safe word of Minnesota, pumpkin patch. Here. Oh, yeah. Do you have any idea who sent me the pumpkin patch bill? The pumpkin patch bill, yes. Yes. Oh, I've got to create. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go home. I got to go create a fake account, and I got to submit this to her. Like, you know, my name is, you know, Chet Longtorso, and I need you to champion a bill for me if you could. Pumpkin patch is the official safe word of the state of Minnesota. If you are into the kinky stuff, you have to say, do you love Minnesota? Then say pumpkin patch. You can say Minnesota pumpkin patch. I mean, that's a little hometown pride there while you get in your clang, clang, clang goes the trolley, you know, that sort of thing. If she's not paying attention, can imagine the bills that we could submit to Mary Franson to co-author and present to the Capitol. You might want to keep a paper trail on that there, Mary. Oh, say it with me, kids. Pumpkin patch. We got Robert Pilot and the crew up next. Have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya.